Welcome to Talking Up Music Education, a podcast from the NAMM Foundation. Talking Up Music Education podcast shares news and stories about music education from teachers, students, parents, school, and community leaders who care about music education and are working to create more opportunities for music learning. And now, here's your host, Mary Lurson.
Hi, everyone. This is Mary Lurson, the NAMM Foundation's Executive Director, and welcome to this episode of Talking Up Music Education. I'm just delighted today to have with me a special guest, Dr. Mark Phillips, who is from the Prairie View A&M University, and we're going to learn more about his important musical accomplishments, but also he is currently the president of the Historic Black College and University's Band Directors Consortium, an important organization that we've been honored to come to know in the last couple of years. So hello, Dr. Phillips, and can I call you Mark?
You may call me Mark. That would be great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. So first of all, tell us where you are today. Where are you? Where am I speaking to you from?
You're speaking to me from the big state of Texas. I am at Prairie View A&M University, which is located north and northwest of the big city of Houston.
So you're right in the heart of Texas, we would say, right?
Very much in the heart of Texas.
Right. Tell us a little bit about your campus. How many students and program offerings outside of music, of course? What else is it offering?
Well, we waver between North Carolina A&T State University between having the largest number of engineering students in the country at an HBCU. We have electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, and I'm not sure of all of the others, but they have at least four or five different areas of engineering that students may come and major in. I can speak better to music than the others, but I know engineering put us on the map. And I say that music put us on the map also because we've been here in existence as a department for over 100 years.
Well, that's impressive. I guess one of my questions that I'm just being inspired to ask you, are there a lot of engineering students that cross over into the music department?
I mean,
you know, they say all this STEM education, right? We like to call it STEAM education with the arts in the middle of that STEM. We hear that a lot, right? There's a great talent crossover.
Yes. We tend to have a lot of students in our activities, the marching band, the orchestra, the concert choir, that are engineering majors because, and I feel this, and I think a lot of parents feel it also, that there's something about the arts that makes for a complete education. When majoring in those other areas, they need something to bring them back to a norm in life, and that's what we create for our students.
Yeah, I think you've summed it up, what we're trying to create for every student in the land, in every land, yes. Right? To have a well-rounded intellectual journey, right? And we all may have our talents, but I mean, as a musician, I spend quite a bit of time gardening, and that's my well-rounded, right? I mean, we all have to have that balance in our lives. Well, that's great. So your background is a trombonist, right? Then a band director, right? Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, my background is administration. I am chair of the Department of Music and Theater. This is going into my sixth year being here at Prairie View A&M University. And before that, I was at Virginia State University for 17 years. And before that, I was at Prairie View. So this is my second stint coming back.
So you've come home in a sense, right?
Yes. Right. It's great to have two homes because Virginia State was my home for so long, and I'm from Virginia. I always go back and check on them. And because I was here in Texas before that, when coming back, I felt like I was coming home because it wasn't that I needed to learn who everybody was. I knew who everybody was, which is a great experience.
So how big is your faculty there in both music and theater, since you kind of cover both?
Theater, we have approximately 15 persons. We have a minor in theater, and we're about to work to create a major in theater. And we have the Charles Gilpin Players housed in theater, and they performed at the Kennedy Center and all over the state of Texas. So we're anxious to get everything back up and running strongly.
So you have a building program in your future to build a program. And
Yes.
Keep it strong. Well, that's that's great.
The BAM program is just slightly different because we have approximately 400 students in the BAM program. And then our concert choir sang in Germany and Poland a couple of years ago. And before that, they were in Columbia, South America. So we've been busy going all over the place trying to spread the word of music.
Wow, that's terrific. 400 in the band.
Yes. And if you saw the Macy's Parade of 2017, the Prairie View A&M University Marching Storm was the lead band in the parade.
The Marching Storm.
yes, ma'am.
You just got to love that. That's great. what would be the mascot for the Marching Storm, right?
Well, we're technically Panthers. But if you look at the band uniform, you'll see some rain clouds and you will also see some thunderbolts.
Well, that's great. So tell us about your background as a trombonist. You have quite an illustrious career as well as a professional.
Well, I started out as a high school music teacher and band director in Prince Edward County, Virginia. And from there, I went to Livingston College, where I was director of bands for almost 3 years. And then I moved over to Prairie View, where I was the assistant director of bands. And I was also in charge of music education. I did that for 10 years. And then I went to Virginia State to be chair of the music department. And when the director of bands, Mr. Harold Houghton, retired, I went in supposedly for 1 or 2 years to be band director and cover that position while a search was going on. But we won a few awards and things of that nature. So that ended up being a 10-year stint.
And wonderful.
We went to the Honda Battle of the Bands. And we did that for 9 years in a row. And people were wondering if I had stock in Honda, but I told them I just put a product out there that they liked.
These HBCU marching bands, they are a force, right?
Yes.
And I know at that event, when they come together to compete and be together, it's like the earth really shakes when they're all together playing. Yes. And it's amazing.
And in all of the years of Honda being there, there hasn't been any major problem with the students because they're so fired up to be there and so excited to do what they were selected to do that we tend not to have problems.
And they're band kids after all, right?
They are.
Right. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, parents of every age, if you want to make sure your kids are going to be good, okay in life, help them make sure they be part of a band or some type of musical ensemble. It just protects them, right? They come into a community where they really find one another and they all help each other and they really, you know, help each other grow up. So that's wonderful to hear.
Definitely. And music and the other arts will become a part of one's life. And regardless of what you do, it's still there. Mm-hmm. And when we have the Honda Battle of the Bands activity in Atlanta, band heads from all over the country show up for that event. And I feel like music, once it's there, there is no getting rid of it.
Right. Yeah. Once you experience it and you're on the path, you just have to stay on the path.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
Yeah. Are you still playing as a trombonist? I mean, you were a very accomplished trombonist, right?
Playing in
symphony orchestra and sackbut societies and all.
Well, I haven't done the sackbut since leaving Oklahoma when I was studying with Herb Wagner at the University of Oklahoma. But when I was in Petersburg, I was in the Petersburg Symphony. And then when I was in North Carolina, I was in the Salisbury Symphony. And then I played with the Virginia State Little Symphony when I was in college. So whenever time permit, I try to get as much playing in as possible.
Good. Well, that's important. You know, we can't say that we believe playing music is important and then we have to do it ourselves. I play the ukulele, even though, you know, I was a trained classical flutist for 1,000 years, but You know, it's just important to always be learning something new. So tell us a bit about the HBCU Band Directors Consortium, what it is, how long you've been involved, and now you're actually leading this organization. Love to hear about it.
Well, we're going through a transition right now because, as you know, we have the COVID situation going on, and pretty much all the schools in the country shut down around spring break time. And we had to make some changes because we were about to have a conference at that time, and we were not able to have it because all of the students were at home and we knew that they would not be able to come to attend. So we've been working with your operation, NAM, and we've been working with Con Selmer, putting all of our resources together. We're able to come up with this virtual conference, which will be the 29th and 30th of August. And for everyone that's in your pod listening community, it's a free virtual conference, and there will be many activities that I'm sure everybody will get something from.
Oh, that's and great.
The more, yeah, the merrier.
The more the merrier. And I'm very excited that I'll be joining you for that conference. And I've actually been having a really good time going back and reading some wonderful lyrics of some of the historic spirituals, because I wanted, my presentation is on Sunday morning. So I want to weave in some of those wonderful messages that come from the ages as we look at ourselves as music advocates. But the consortium really tries to reach across all the HBCUs, right?
It does. I mean,
the band directors and the that sometimes are competing at places like the Honda Battle or other places. They're competing for students, we know, yes, right? They're recruiting students into these programs. So yes, tell us about that network of folks that come together.
When you look at all of the HBCUs in the country, and Dr. Sanford put this together perhaps better than anybody else could, stating that most do not have a complete concert band. You will have a concert band, but you may not have all of the necessary instruments in order for it to be complete. And when coming to consortium, we were trying to create that one complete something so that when all of the students from HBCUs graduate, they will have had an opportunity to participate in a group that would have full instrumentation and expose them to what that sound will be like, so that once they get out, and if they're music education majors, be able to create the same scenario with the students that they would have to train and teach to be musicians. And we had various small ensembles, various workshops with various persons coming in from around the country to work with the kids and demonstrate pretty much everything that they would have to encounter.
So in a traditional time frame when we're not dealing with pandemics and lockdowns and no travels and no ensembles, right?
Yes.
The consortium, the campuses, and I've been to your conferences, and the campuses would bring their instrumental students to a location, and I think it was generally in Atlanta, right?
Correct.
And then there were clinics and workshops, and then putting them together that they actually could perform sort of as honors ensembles or various versions of those ensembles, right?
Yes, is correct.
Yeah.
And with the small ensembles, I feel like it really enhanced their playing because they've got to listen to the other persons within the group to make sure that the balance and the style is the exact same. My rehearsal when doing low brass ensemble would begin at midnight, and they would always say, "Why do we start so late?" I said, "Because there's so many other things happening in the daytime. And you have a lifetime to sleep, but you're only going to be here for a weekend. And when you finish life and go to sleep, I don't think anyone will be waking you up. So we've got to create as much as we can while we can wake you up."
You know, isn't that the truth for this time? Boy, I'm going to remember that when I'm very tired at the end of the day. I'm going to remember that because we're all working pretty hard. So I'd love to learn from your perspective of an HBCU, what are the current realities for your music students? And you know, it also goes out, what can all of us who care about them, because we really do care about their future, where their commitment to be a music student and what they hope in their lives, and really how we can support college music students everywhere, really, that are not having the experience that they've always dreamed of, maybe, right? I mean, what's happening with them?
This has been very scary, and not only for the college and university level, but for public schools, private schools, anyone that has a music program, and you've got to come up with unique ways to make sure that your students are practicing. And in certain instances, they do not have an instrument at home, especially if they're using school loan instruments. And I don't want this to be a situation that will make the level of music in the country diminish, because being out of school and without the proper instruction, the growth that's necessary will not take place. And seeing how the athletic events at the university level are beginning to change, with perhaps football coming second semester, whereas that would have been something that would be taking place towards the end of August and to the month of December, it will perhaps be from February through April. And trying to juggle this and juggle all of the things that we always do the second semester is going to be a challenge. So it will require some unique work, so to speak, on our behalf to figure out how to make sure that all of these items will be able to jive together.
You know, when I've talked to music teachers, especially band directors across the country, we've had discussions about the value of this time, how we can make this time valuable. That's what I really mean to say, with all the expectations and the normalcy of this time. And there's been a starting of a conversation for especially ensembles about comprehensive musicianship. You know, how do we use this time when we can't be together to train our young, talented musicians from high school level, really, up through college, in understanding how to read a score, in understanding how to interpret a recording and compare the recordings of the great wind ensemble works, maybe even learning a secondary instrument, right? So, yes. You know, sight reading, ear training, right?
Yes.
You know, and I was joking with actually some of the band directors in Kansas. They said, that's the ensemble I want to hear in the spring. I want to hear that ensemble that everyone has done ear training together and everyone has done some sight reading and everyone's done some score analysis. That's the ensemble I want to go sit in on and their final dress rehearsal, because I think we have to remember we have time and we have talents and we have interest and we have repertoire and we have tools, like you and I talking from New York and Texas, right? I mean,
yes,
we have tools and we have to, I think by nature, musicians and music teachers and music students, they are bridge builders. They want to continue learning, right?
Yes.
So have faith, I guess, is what I want to say, and go to work, right? Have
yes.
faith and go to work.
One of the things that I've seen that ties directly to what you're saying is programs such as a cappella, dual Google, where they can mesh together and be able to play and synchronize it together. I've had some students that decided, well, since I'm going to be here in the house alone, be able to use a cappella and just do quartets and things and just keep recording tracks and playing it back. And see, I did this by myself.
Yeah.
So it's making everyone become uniquely different. They're realizing there are certain things they can do once they sit and work at it.
Yeah, and that includes faculty, right?
Yes.
Right? I mean,
yes.
that we have to keep reaching out to students. So I guess to end, my question is, how can we be, all of us who care about this, be supportive of these students, right? I mean, is it just making sure that the campuses that have these great programs know that we still support them, you know, and we still care? I mean, what some of our roles and opportunities?
If we let them know that we support and care, that's very important, because with the social distancing being as it is, we know marching band can't be right now what it was in the past. And depending upon the size of your ensemble, you cannot social distance or you'll take up the whole stadium. And there may not be a seat for anybody else who may attend the game. And then you have to stop and think from another perspective. Do we try and record what we're doing some type way and let them play it through the PA system to make sure that they realize that we are alive and thriving in music? So we have to come up with ways to make sure that as a people, musicians are still there and that they don't forget we're there, because there are so many things that music will do for you that other things won't. You have music to get up to, music to go to church, music to go to the funeral, music to go to the club, music to go to the shopping center. There's music that will satisfy whatever mode or mood you get into.
Yeah. One thing I just want to mention to you and hope you help us spread the word to express our care for these students, music students everywhere. We have our Gen Next program, and we're going to be offering in the fall months a series of webinars for college music students and faculty that they can tap into what our career music would look like from a variety of perspectives, be it as music teachers or lifelong performers or producers, and just so all of the and meet with leaders in the industry now. So we want to make sure your students are aware of that. And then we also offer, we're going to have sort of a when we were having our NAMM show in January, we would actually offer financial scholarships to students could come to our NAMM show. Well, we're not having that show this year. We're going to actually have a virtual event, like all of us are. But we want to invite, the leaders in music on campuses to apply to get a President's Innovation Award. And they would have a separate 3-series track to meet with our CEO and leaders of other companies, that they could have these conversations about a career in music. But it's also our way of saying, we're concerned about this crowd of talented, creative young people. And we want them to know that there's a community and a business community that really welcomes their talent and their ideas. So we'll be sure you get all that information. And I want anyone listening to our podcast here to watch for it as well at the NAMM Foundation website.
That would be tremendous. And acts of that nature will help to make sure that music stays the strong, vibrant something it needs to be.
Yeah. And, I think of this time, too, what has overwhelmed the internet more than anything? All these people doing music, right? I mean, I haven't counted it and I haven't seen the data, but there's... And early on in March, when we did our first online teaching and learning music webinars, we kept emphasizing, look, what a perfect use of time. Double down, practice, right? Get the coaching. Go and you can, every musician is not performing right now, right? And many really the greats are offering coaching sessions and online tutorials. And you could, double down and become that expert as on your instrument. So is your campus currently meeting? Students are meeting?
Yes, I met with a group of students this morning. I met with entering freshman music majors, and they were taking their theory placement exam and asking questions about classes and how will everything work come next week when all the classes will begin. So we're trying to calm their nerves and calm their parents' nerves to let them know that this is going to be okay. We're going to do the best we can under the circumstances we've been given.
And so far, the campus is working on health compliance, and there's certain rules and restrictions in place. And
Yes. Yeah. And we also have free COVID testing that students may go and receive on campus. And we have all type literature at all the dormitories inside all the buildings. There are sanitization stations and stations that have masks just in case somebody doesn't have a mask. All of the necessary things needed to be safe, we have them available to all of our students.
Well, we certainly wish you luck, Mark Fellows, and with all of your wonderful 400-piece marching band. Like I say, just think they'll all practice what they're going to sound like after some deep learning of a different type. Any final thoughts for us as we end up our conversation together that you'd like to share with our audience?
Well, one of the things I like the audience to know is that the HBCU National Band Directors Consortium has had a wonderful relationship with NAM, with Con Selmer, with Rico Reeds and various percussion groups. And we have all type sponsors that are very, very interested in making sure that music stays afloat. But NAM and Con were at the top of the list. They made sure they had on life rafts to make sure that nothing would go underwater. And for that assistance and help, we say thank you.
We are honored to support you, and we are honored to continue our great friendships going forward. And I can't wait to be with you in just 10 days. We'll be the conference online. I'll be looking for you. I'm not quite sure how we do that online. I know there's ways.
Oh, yes. I think I have a session on Saturday, and you have a session Sunday morning.
On Sunday, and that's the one that I'm researching some wonderful spiritual lines. The one that I love the most is, I don't feel no way tired.
Come too far from where I've come from.
I know. I decided that when I get to my 10th or 11th hour of the day and I have yet another important note to write, is I looked down and said, I don't feel no way tired. So, you know, we have to carry on and carry on to better days and the next times when we'll all be meeting again together.
Yes.
So, Mark, thank you so very much for our conversation today. I really appreciated it. We wish you luck with the conference coming up.
Thank you so much. And this has been tremendous. And for everyone in your listening audience, if you have not met Mary, if you have not had the opportunity to talk to her, she's an absolute wonderful, special person.
Well, aren't you nice? Ended up with my very own PSA. Thank you. And to all of you listening today, thank you for joining us in this absolutely delightful conversation with Dr. Mark Phillips from Prairie View A&M University in just outside of Texas, Houston, Texas somewhere, yes, and also the president of the HBCU Band Directors Consortium. Thanks so much, Mark.
Let me say one thing. I'm acting because we're going through a change and I'm not sure who the real president will be yet, but we couldn't let this opportunity go without having some conversation and dialogue with NAM.
Yeah. So
I thank you.
Absolutely. And whether you're acting or not, you're still top of the heap with us. So thanks so much. Thanks so much, Mark.
And do have a good day.
You too.
Talking Up Music Education is a podcast created by the NAM Foundation. To learn more about how you can support music education in your community or how you can be part of the work of the NAM Foundation, visit our website, www.namfoundation.org, or join us on Facebook at facebook.com/NAM Foundation. You can also follow Mary on Twitter at Mary L. NAM. That's Mary L. N-A-M-M.